Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm very pleased this afternoon to be joined by Sherry, who at the outset of our Bridgewalk season here is here to speak with us about the particularly spiritual reasons for the work in Africa. Welcome, Sherry.
Well, thank you, Jen.
Can I do a sound check, please, first, before we get launched? I'm on, I hope, a much better phone here.
You sound great.
Yeah, you sound great to me also, Jen.
Okay, thanks, Michael.
Yep.
So, you know, Sherry, 11 years ago, we got off the plane in Zimbabwe.
Isn't that astounding?
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
11 years ago. Wow.
Yeah, so I will tell you this quickly, that in my closet right now is that walking stick that we bought on the bridge across between Zimbabwe and Zambia.
Yep.
Is that where it is? Yes, across the...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know I still had it. I thought I had given it away or it had gone to a bridge walk or something, and I was going through some stuff the other day, and there it was. And I was so excited because I thought there has to be something that we can do with that at this time because it's so... There's just so much of everything in it.
And I can picture it perfectly. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a put it on the wall, not a take it for a walk kind of thing. Yeah. So anyway, the spiritual aspects of this, to me, are beautifully represented in that walking stick.
Ah, very nice.
Okay. I didn't think about that until I just thought about that.
That's very good. Don't you love that?
Yes, I love that when that happens. Because it's such a, it's just so, it's so beautiful. It's so, it's made with such love and care and reverence. When you see this thing, when you pick it up, you can just feel what has gone into it. The culture, the history, the spirituality that has gone into creating this item.
And with, as you say, with so much care and so much, I was just speaking with someone who hand makes furniture. And we were talking about, I was telling him about the work in Africa because we were looking at some things that we have here at the monastery that we no longer need. And I said, oh, I would give anything if I could pack these roofing sheets into my luggage and take these over. And then we were talking about this art form that he essentially does of making furniture and how there just isn't really a market here for it because I can go to Walmart and buy a cheap one. What would I want that for?
Yeah.
And as you say that, and I was saying, you know, how happy and joyful. I mean, it's a generalization, but that so many people are, you know, especially in Cantalomba, and just that taking time and having the time to just be with something in that way, to take the time to carve this beautiful thing and just be there in the silence of doing that. It's something that it feels like we don't have a lot of access to in this culture, at least.
Right, and that really is the spiritual aspect of it for me. So, as you well know, we're just starting an email class, and I read something somewhere, or somebody said to me recently, and I mean no disrespect when I say this, but that gluten intolerance, which is epidemic in our country, is a privileged person's illness.
And
the person meant was, you know, people have all kinds of things going on with them, all kinds of things. And it just doesn't matter because there's no ability to do anything about it. So there's no sense in thinking about it, worrying about it, or pursuing it. And in that same way, so many of our issues, and I mean no disrespect, and I hope nobody goes to any self-hate about this, or allows any self-hate to come in about this. But we are so privileged that the things that we concern ourselves with are things that can only be the concern of very, very privileged people. And sometimes, you know, if we get very involved with egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate, we can get focused on these very self-centered kinds of concerns.
Yeah.
And because we're so privileged, lose complete sight of the fact that most, we can say the majority of the world lives in circumstances that would make worrying about the kinds of things we worry about absurd. They wouldn't. They couldn't. There's no time. There's no energy. There's no anything. And so for us, in fact, that is the very impulse that started us down this road is, can we have a larger picture? Can we have spiritual practice and awareness practice mean something other than microscopically dissecting my ego?
Yes, exactly. Oh, and as you say that, Jared, boy, it just fits so beautifully with the opening of where we are as a Sangha, isn't it? Because, you know, this year of upping our game, especially this last at-home workshop, really focusing on, yes, we want to do all of this stuff to care for this incredible gift of a body that we've been given and to be in a human form and on all of those things. But from that place that you're talking about of, to give it to life, not because I want to feel a certain way or I want a certain experience for me. And I feel like the work in Africa has that huge gift, I know it does for me, of pulling us to that larger perspective, to that much bigger place.
Yes, because microscopically dissecting the ego has nothing to do with caring for the human.
Exactly.
It doesn't serve
the human at all.
Yeah, in fact, exactly the opposite, because that's how people get bamboozled, to use the phrase of the day, into not caring for themselves because there's this endless focus on what's wrong and what's missing and what I'm doing wrong and what's wrong with me and what's wrong with you and what's wrong with them and how this is and what I should be and all of that sort of thing that has nothing to do with who we are or anything that's real.
Yeah, yeah.
So when we get out of that and we step into a place that says, wow, you know, the world is a lot bigger and a lot more different than the little world that I live in. That's one piece of it. Then we look at these very, very sweet people, and we can perceive them as very, very sweet people because we can't speak their language, and they live in a completely different way than we do. We know nothing about them, and it's obvious we know nothing about them, so we can't actually project very much.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. Yeah,
which is another spiritual advantage, right?
Yeah,
now, we could have the same view of our neighbors and relatives and all that. It's really hard, right? Because our projections seem so accurate. So we go over there and we see these people and we see these little kids and we think, oh, I really don't want them to starve.
No.
I really don't. Yeah. I don't want them to die because they don't have clean drinking water. I don't want them to have baby after baby after baby only to have it die before it reaches age 3 or 4.
Yeah.
I don't want anybody to go through that. If there's anything I can do to prevent it.
Yeah.
And then magically we find out, well, actually there is. There is something that we can do.
And that part, a huge piece of, we could say almost the foundational piece of the something we can do is waking up and ending suffering, because that's what makes it sustainable. That's what keeps us in that we place instead of, you know, if it's just from an I should or it's the good person thing to do, it's never going to be sustained. But when it comes from that larger place of our hearts are opened, our, you know, we're transformed, we're awake, then we always want to do that. We always want to be looking from that bigger perspective.
Yes, wherever we are and whatever we're doing.
Yeah.
So it really benefits us first.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we hope, of course, we never know, but we hope it benefits someone else as well. Mm-hmm. And the other spiritual piece of it is that I happen to know an awful lot of people. Now, maybe the whole world isn't this way, and I've just never met the people who aren't. But an awful lot of people who live in a story of there really is something wrong with me. You know, I'm not a kind person. I'm not compassionate. I'm selfish. I'm not generous. I'm just not a good person. And when, you know, if we're not doing anything to refute that, it's kind of hard to do anything but sit there and say, that's not true, all the time, believing that, well, it probably is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But when we're doing something that is obviously kind and compassionate and generous and loving, when those voices come at us, we can, on firm ground, say, that's not true, and know that we are right. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, they'll come in with, well, okay, so you do that one thing with living compassion, but all the rest of it, okay, I do that one thing, and that's really all the proof I need. Thank you very much.
Yeah, oh, that's very good. That's I don't know if I've ever really seen that. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, once we get the hang of that, it really is so much more fun to live in relationship with life than with those voices always telling us what's wrong with us, and that we just start looking for more and more things that open the heart and let us feel who and what we truly are.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, God, that's beautiful. I can really feel that as you say that. And, you know, I saw one other thing as you were talking about. Again, I don't know if I've ever seen this quite like this before, but I've heard you talk about the process of having a dog that you love, but that the love that you have for that dog then has you fall in love with dogs. You know, or having a grandchild and loving that grandchild so much that you fall in love with children.
Yes.
And I just realized that I think that process happens. It certainly it does for me, and I project as a Sangha that it's like that old joke of, you know, you got to meet, shake hands with everyone in the world, and we'd never have war. Well, I can't go to war with them. They're my, you know, those are my friends.
My friends, I know them.
And here we have this opportunity where there's this community. It could be any community. It, you know, it doesn't in particular matter where it is or who it is. But the fact that we are able to get to know these particular kids and these particular grown-ups and, you know, this cooperative and this community of people feels like it plants the seed for this process of love that then, I mean, it really is inner peace, world peace. You know, it's like falling in love with this community makes me realize, oh, my God, it's the same everywhere, all over the world.
Yes, yes. So it's kind of the experience that I know you know very well, which happens to people particularly in There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
So you walk in, and there's this bunch of strangers, and you know if you met them at a party, you'd have a lot of opinions about them, right? Because that's what we're trained to do. And so, you know, everybody's a little nervous and anxious and insecure and that sort of thing, although nobody knows it. I think I'm the only one. And then we start spending time together in this extraordinary, heart-opening way. And these people change before my eyes, right? It's a miracle. They just become so lovable and so sweet and so dear, and it begins to dawn on me at some point that I might not be the only exception in this room.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's my favorite point of retreat. Yeah.
And we're changed. We're changed forever. We know something about how life works that can never be taken away from us, no matter what any voice would ever say.
So, just to underline what you said, I mean, we receive so much. It can seem like it's service, and, you know, there's a way in which you could call it that, but boy, are we served as a Sangha in the generosity of the participation of this community, you know, 12,000 miles away, so.
Yeah, well, we get to feel our hearts opening.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing better.
So true.
Yeah.
So we have 52 million steps to walk between now and October 4th.
Well, I'm walking mine, Jen. I will tell you that. I am so committed. I am neurotic.
Me too. Good.
Yeah.
Good. And it's so much fun.
Yeah.
It's so much
fun. Again, you know, we're in the middle of we're in the first week of an email class. And so, that's hours of standing at the computer for me. And the whole focus, aside from the fact that I love doing email classes and talking to people in that way, but the other thing is I'm looking at my watch right?
Okay.
Well, actually, I don't wear a watch, but it's right there on my computer.
Yeah.
You know, when am I going to get the steps in? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So two more batches, and then I'll try to get 2,000 steps, and then I'll.
Completely.
And it makes it fun. You know.
I know. Exactly.
So much fun. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm traveling on whatever day it is. Wednesday, Thursday, I guess it is, and it's the
Ooh.
First major travel day I've had since I've been this committed. I'm like, I'm going to be doing laps up and down the concourses. And
on the plane, they're going to have to tie
exactly.
you in your seat.
Yeah, I got an aisle seat. No, I have to use the restroom again. I really do. But
oh,
it's super
well,
fun.
I
and hope. It's the topic of another good news update. But the team in Cantillon is fired up. They are lit up with their 52 million words. So
uh-huh.
excited. The kids kept Teresa late. On Friday, she couldn't get home because they were like, oh, Auntie Teresa, a few more words. So it's super fun.
Oh,
yeah.
And there's the spiritual aspect of it right there, captured
yeah.
in that little vignette, right?
Really?
Hearts are
really?
Open and people are lit up and they're excited
yeah.
to be alive and they feel good about themselves and we just, that's where we all want to live.
Exactly. And they know we're over here taking our steps and they're over there reading their words and, you know,
mm-hmm.
what a perfect thing that is. You know, we need the exercise. They're exercising. Their whole life is exercise. You know, for us, reading is not a big deal. For them, reading is the whole world. That's a whole, you know, world opening up for them. So it's just like, it gives me goosebumps all over. It's just such a win.
Yeah, it is.
So,
yeah.
But we have a radio show to do. So.
Oh, we do. I know Michael is patiently waiting. Although Michael is so into this. I know he's not just having to patiently wait. He is so
exactly.
into this. That, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Thank you,
Sherry.
And Michael, we'll turn it over to you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. You are right on that, Sherry. That's very correct.
Yeah.
I got a big grin on my face here.
Yeah. Oh, I know you. You're a junkie for this project. So.
I am.
Always have been.
I am. It's true.
Again, I go
true.
Back to that. One of my favorite pictures of all time is Claire with Martin in a sling
yeah.
at Bridgewalk.
Yes.
It's just, yeah. So years and years.
Yes. And so good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And I didn't realize those kids are going to be reading 52 million words to match our steps. Is that right?
Is that crazy?
That's wonderful.
Yeah. You know they're going to do it.
That's great. Yes.
And plus, you know, they're writing stories from over there. So I got to write one. I think it was the first one in the series of Why We Walk Together.
Yes.
And then people here are going to write them, and people over there are going to write them.
Oh, wow.
Just great.
Fun,
wish we could bring them all here to Chrissy Field.
Yes, it's great. And I loved your story about trying to figure out when you're going to get your steps in. That's fun and I inspiring for me, and I project for others as well.
Yeah, I mean, if I don't have my phone in my pocket when I'm going around, it's like, oh, no.
Yes.
I can't get those steps. That,
yeah.
Yeah. So it's in that regard, it's also a great awareness exercise. This, you know, I know where that pacer is every second.
Because
I want those steps. So, and of course, it's fabulous for fitness.
Yes. Double
mm-hmm.
many benefits.
Yeah. You just
win.
Can't lose with this one.
Great.
Yeah. Do you have some announcements? I'll shut up here in a minute.
I do. Mark your calendar for this year's Bridge Walk, which is on October 4th. Walk with Sangha and support the Africa Vulnerable Children Project.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few spots left for the Eightfold Path Retreat in Pennsylvania. That's September 1st through 6th. Explore the Buddha's roadmap for ending suffering.
Yes, now, Michael, I want to say something about that because I'm doing this email class, you know. And what I get is that people are shy and they're afraid to come on retreat. And they're listening to voices talking them out of it and telling them all sorts of things about what it's going to be like.
Well,
you and I both know what it's going to be like is fabulous. And so I'm hoping that people out there who've been listening, who want to go, and are listening to voice, oh, is it costume? You can't just be away, and this is that, and you'll do something later. Just don't listen anymore. Just hop on it and do it. Just do it for yourself and for the rest of us.
Yes. Yes, retreat is great. It's lovely. It's wonderful, spacious, good food.
Right. There's no reason not to do it, really.
Yes, yes. So visit schedule.livingcompassion.org for more information on these and all the upcoming events. And to make guest show, to indicate your desire to talk with Sherry, press *6 and then 1. And we could use a few more callers in the queue. So if you're so inclined, that would be great.
Make guest show.
And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get started.
All right.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Shockingly live.
Hi, this is Mary Jane in San Francisco.
Hey, Mary Jane.
I'm so glad
I
can't
expect to get on.
Yes, and I was kind of had this. Well, I was on, like, I think 2 weeks ago, I can't remember, recently, and then it was a story of, you know, don't call because it's too soon. But I really could use assistance. So I basically keep finding myself in this process where I something happens with someone else that, let's say, upsets an identity and then... I end up not telling them that this X thing bothered me. Or, you know, maybe I try to really focus on just the facts. I've started to do that's a new thing. And it kind of churns up the inner energy of anger and pain. and it's particularly strong. I have people, like, one or two people in my significant people in my life who are, I think they have a reputation as kind of a bully, and so if I actually talk to them, it often doesn't go well, because they get really angry in response, and
when you say you try to talk to them, you mean if you try to say what that exchange that we had was upsetting to me, that sort of thing?
Yeah.
So they're all right as long as you don't say anything they don't like.
Yeah. I mean, mostly, yeah. If I say something they disagree with or don't support, then, and there might also be threats because there's some financial entanglement that I'm trying to resolve, but kind of, well, then this financial support will be gone or whatever. So that's kind of an element of it too. But yeah, it's okay if I don't say things that upset. And sometimes I don't know, like they could be in a really great mood, but you don't quite, it's kind of unpredictable and that one bad mood. I mean, it's obvious, it's a relative. So I think it turns up a very young part of me because I experienced it a lot when I was little. So it's not that dangerous now, but, you know, I know with this person it's not that safe today to talk to them, but it's probably better than it was. And I know with other people, you know how you transfer that on to other people. So I know it's usually okay with other people. It's more of a projection with most people. But with one or two people, I just don't know, like, whether I'm being afraid, whether I'm being afraid to speak up, or you know, or whether it's wise to, wise to kind of just stay internal and focus on caring for whoever's being, and protect that young part from being hurt by this other person.
Okay. Well, there. I have some questions.
Yes.
But I have something to say first, which is, you know, that young person never has to be around those people.
Yeah, I know that in theory, and sometimes I don't think that they're around, but then I realize by the reaction I have later that they were exposed to it.
Okay, so that's your job, isn't it? right? That's really your
role. And
how
do you really create that protection? Yeah.
Well, you can
so just
you can
really
do
working
it.
With the coach on.
Yep, you can certainly can and by kind of role playing it. So you think about that person, that little person, and you say, okay, now you're going to stay here and do X, Y, Z, and I'm going to go off and I'll be back in a little while. And that's your signal to become an adult, a grown-up.
Okay,
And to stay in that mode, right? So that's your practice part of it, right? Then the question is, how much do you want to be in relationship with, let's just pick one of them or both of them or whatever, but with these people?
Well, yeah, my experience has not been good, like 50% of the time, but 50% of the time, it's not 80% bad. It's like, actually,
but
it's
how, but
like
how
20%
much do you,
really bad. I'm.
But how much do you
want to be in a relationship?
You do.
Yes.
You do, okay.
I mean, maybe
you know,
I want it in a better relationship. I mean, I don't want the relationship we have. That's the thing. Yeah, I guess I don't want the relationship we have.
There are people, I'll say for myself, with whom I'm not interested in being in a relationship. Now, I may interact with them, but I'm not interested in being in a relationship with them. So I don't need to work at having a relationship with them. I just need to be the way I choose to be with people when I'm with them.
Yeah, okay.
That's very different from this is a really important person to me. I want to do whatever is required to have the best relationship I can have with this person. So that might be one place to look. Because if it's somebody really important to me, then I'm going to pretty much learn how to do whatever is required to have that relationship. Which can mean I'm not going to get to have all of my conscious or unconscious needs met all the time in this relationship. I may, in fact, have to change things about me in order to have this relationship.
And I think that's a place, like, in terms of feeling badly, like, when you know how when you operate in a way that you don't really want to operate, but I guess having kindness for yourself, that's just the reality of that relationship.
Yes. Well, and if I really want the relationship, then I am behaving the way I want to behave. So if it's really upsetting to you, let's pick this one. I'm your mother. And, of course, you know, I raised you. So I like to give you a lot of advice about how to raise your daughter. Right? But it's really upsetting to you when I do that, and that becomes clear to me. Now, to me, of course, it's being loving. And I've dreamed of this all since you were born, of having grandchildren, and I could blah, 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 blah. But I want to have a relationship with you. And so I'm going to nix my version of what it's like to get to be a grandmother, because my relationship with you is more important than me holding on to an idea about how I'm going to be a grandmother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So seeing those kinds of things often in relationship, conditional relationships often go this way. I'm in relationship with you. I love you. You're really important to me, and I need you to be the way I want you to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, those are often extremely unhappy relationships.
Yeah. I seem to have a few of those.
Yeah. Yeah. So getting clear about what we really want can be extremely helpful.
Mm. Okay.
All right.
Well, let me take a look at that. Yeah,
and then you'll let me know.
Yeah, I will. Thank you.
Yeah, we can take it step by step.
Yeah, that sounds good. This is a big one. So this is good bamboozle. You know, no more collusion. So
exactly, and that's a place where it would happen, isn't it? Relationship. Ooh, prime bamboozle territory. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mary Jane.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Mary Jane. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Well, we got something going on there, but it doesn't sound like a person.
I think I hear the radio show in the background.
Hello?
Oh, there we go.
Hello?
Oh, I'm on. Hi.
Hi. Who's this?
This is Nancy.
Hey, Nancy.
Hi.
How's it going?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. This is my first time calling, so I'm a little nervous.
Uh-huh. Well, welcome. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for your books. They've been amazing. I was calling to ask about, self-hatred.
Mm-hmm. It's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah. So this, it's like the fear of, like, the judge in my, let me just give an example. Mm-hmm. So I was, going to visit family, and I was on the train. So before I got on the train, I was deliberating, you know, should I go now? Should I go like a week later, back and forth? And there's always this fear of like making a decision, mm-hmm. making the wrong decision.
Mm-hmm.
And the fear is if I make the wrong decision, I'll have that sort of the accuser's.
You'll get beaten up.
Yeah, so I get on the train, and this has happened like a bazillion times. I'm on the train, and at some point there's this, like, I feel like really disturbed inside, like, oh, shucks, I made the wrong decision. And it's like I'm, you know, I hide. I go down where people, there aren't a lot of people, and I'm like crying, feeling like crap because there's a sense of, oh, gosh, I really screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels terrible. And for years, I would be like, at that moment, I would just like try to find something to eat. It's like shove it down with food, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So now there's this like constant anxiety before doing something. Like, oh, I might screw up, and I might get beaten up again.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah.
I'll tell
and I
you
feel
what.
Like paralyzed in many
yep.
ways.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
I know that place intimately. And I will tell you what you probably already know. You are not alone. Okay? It does seem to be the conditioned human being's condition. So this is good because there are so many of us on the same road. It's a well-worn path. And so some of the components of it that I would suggest to you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, that process, and you probably, this will be familiar to you, but that's okay. That process of beating you up has nothing to do with what you do.
Right. It's like I don't win either way.
You never win. You'll never win.
Right.
You'll never win. That's right. That
so if
is
I
so
stay and I go the following week, it'll
that
be like,
so
oh, why didn't you go previous week?
I can't tell you how important that is to see. Yeah, because if you know that you are in relationship with someone, we'll make that a someone, and you cannot please that person, The thing that that frees you up to do is stop trying to please them. Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so if they're going to be unhappy no matter what, well, then do whatever you want, because you know they're going to be unhappy no matter what. Right? If there were a chance that you could win, then it might be worth it to try. But if you know you can't, then good. You're a free agent. You can go whenever you want. Okay? So that one that you already know is it might just be the very biggest one. The very biggest one for us to get. Okay? So the second one to get is it now. This goes so against what every conditioned person on the planet believes. No matter what language they speak, they believe it in their language. It is not possible to make a mistake.
Really?
We cannot. Yes, that is the God's truth. It is not possible. It is absolutely not possible. The idea of mistake is pure fantasy. Okay? Now, once we get that, then it frees us up to do this really extraordinary thing that human beings can do, which is pay attention and learn. So, you come along, and you have this really sad story for me, and you seem such a nice person, and I really like you. And you really need the money. So I give you all my money. And it turns out that you're actually a con artist. Okay? Now, what I'm supposed to do then is feel bad, feel stupid, be embarrassed and ashamed. But what I could do, and be beaten, right, for having made a mistake, but what I could do is learn from that. A really valuable life lesson. Yeah? But instead of learning that lesson, what conditioned mind does to us is put us through this beating, make us feel bad, toss us out on the shore, exactly the same person we were before, knowing no more than we knew before we gave that person all that money. Oh, that'd be you. And just feeling bad and miserable and more defeated and depleted than ever. So that's kind of a lot of the good news about this. And the difficulty in it is that system that has been able to do this to you, to control you in this way, and just suck the life force out of you and, you know, just do with you as it will, is not going to be excited about changing the relationship it has with you. So you are going to have to be the one that does the changing. And the change that you need to make is simple and straightforward. You need to stop believing what it says and doing what it says and feeling what it tells you to feel. That's your job. It will never stop. Okay? No matter how good you are, no matter how hard you try, no matter how much you cry, no matter how bad you feel, it will never stop doing that to you. You have to end the relationship. And you can do it. Just take practice.
I didn't hear the last part.
It just takes practice.
Oh.
Yeah. Do you record and listen?
What?
Do you have a recording and listening practice?
No.
Oh, you've got something very fun ahead of you. So recording and listening, if you Google recordandlisten.org, and it's all record and listen, I think that's it. Michael, you'll tell me if that's not true. It gives you all kinds of introductions to recording and listening. It tells you steps, and you can read what people say who are doing the practice, and they have tips and hints and stories and all kinds of things. And what you'll get introduced to in that practice is the mentor. And the mentor is the wise, kind, compassionate presence that will always accompany you, be there to support you and offer wisdom and guidance, and become a buffer between you and that self-hating system.
Sherry, I have the website here.
What is it, Michael?
It's recordingandlistening.org.
Okay, so it's an ING, recordingandlistening.org.
Yep,
okay,
exactly.
Thank you, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
So that would, I would really encourage you to visit there and start that practice, because it's one of the big tools that we have to, again, begin to put distance between you and that system that is so hateful.
Is addiction also, like the thing I told you with food? But,
yes. Yes, the mentor can help with that as well, because the addiction is the biggest support system for ego, you know, for egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate. That's it is the ultimate addiction. People are addicted to that, and all of the addictions that people have support that. So you
addicted
have
to what, ego?
Yes, addicted to,
okay,
ego. Addicted to that system, you know, just focused on it all the time. What does it think about me? What is it saying? What should I do? It said this. Oh God, I feel so bad. I'm afraid of it. You know, it's just our most intimate relationship.
Mm.
And so with something like food, of course, it orchestrates that addiction to bring the maximum amount of suffering to your life.
Mm.
Right? So it talks you, it puts you in situations and tells you food is going to be the thing that makes you feel better, and then, of course, beats you up after you ate the food that it said was going to make you feel better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have, of course, also a lot of retreats, right? And down the road, I'm hoping that you will participate in a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, because they are designed to speak exactly to this. They are the going beyond self-hate retreat.
Okay.
But for right now, we can, as with Mary Jane, we can take this step by step.
Okay.
All right? So those things that we've talked about tonight, it's never going to change. Okay? You're never going to please it. And your job is to stop listening to and believing it. Okay, it's never going to quit beating you, and it's not possible to make a mistake. So, see how you do with those, and then give me a call back and let me know how you're doing.
All right, thank you so much.
You are so welcome. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Nancy. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And Sherry, we're going to break here to hear from our coaches program, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
The practice theme for this year is upping your game. We are all spiritual athletes in the game of life, and we can train to participate joyfully in the spirit of play. Yes, we are up against a worthy opponent, egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate. But we can up our chances of success by getting a personal trainer, a Zen Awareness Coach. The Awareness Coaches are guided by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching around any number of life issues or awareness practice in general. Coaching places a special emphasis on recording and listening. We hear from folks new to practice and from old timers that awareness coaching provides the extra support their heart desires. Since coaches donate a percentage of their fees to practice, getting a coach assists us to support ourselves while supporting practice. To request a Zen Awareness Coach, visit sanghamarket.com, go to the services section, click on the little monk, and then follow the directions. We hope to hear from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have more callers here, Sherry.
Good.
Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, it's Valerie.
Hey, Valerie. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Good. What's going on?
I'm just setting off self-hate, pretty much. Just ready to record after I talk to you through strong emotion and self-hate.
Uh-huh. So it's going on right now. It's doing its darndest to get you. And you've got a little plan set up. You're going to talk to me, and then you're going to record and listen. And it's going crazy. Is that
right.
Pretty much it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're gutsy, aren't you?
Well, I'd like to become a courageous person. I'd like to be a courageous person.
Well, how about you already are? And maybe you just want to practice that more.
Yeah, I want to practice that more. Yeah.
Yeah, because you're calling in and you're going to record and listen in the face of massive attacks of self-hatred. That's pretty courageous.
Yeah. I also am, and recording through fear also.
Mm-hmm.
And just noticing what my personality does in the face of fear and self-hate.
Uh-huh. And Valerie, can you sense the distinction between you, kind of centered, authentic you, and that system of self-hatred and fear?
Yeah, I think that I think it can put me in a trance and really convince me that I need to listen to it, that I really need to sit down, stare into nothing, and listen intently. And it's not something I want to do anymore. I don't want to just sit there and listen to it, even though it sounds so convincing that I should spend my time doing that.
Right. And what argument does it make for you spending your time doing that?
That I have to review and remember and assess and correct mistakes and check and then project out of what other people feel about me and figure out how I am going to deal with how I'm projecting on to how other people are feeling about me and all this fun stuff.
Okay. And it sounds like you're really clear that that's not a good way to spend your time, right?
It's a waste of life.
It is a waste of a life. Because, you know, now here's the thing. If that voice that's talking to you has the technology to correct mistakes, boy, does that have to be in quotes, to correct mistakes from the past, I want to buy that technology for any price that's set. Because can you imagine what a happy thing that would be? We would just get people and they would say, okay, this happened and this happened and this happened and this happened, and we run them through the technology and say, okay, you're clean. And then they go on about their lives. But the fact of the matter is that technology doesn't exist, and nobody can do anything about what has already happened except learn from it, which we do if we're paying attention immediately and requires no review whatsoever. Yeah?
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah. So the good thing about all of this is that you now have an alternative that, of course, we're going to encourage you either sit down and listen to, or better yet, put on your walking shoes and your earbuds and walk and listen to the wisdom of the mentor talking about what is so about life right now.
Yep.
Way better,
huh? Yep, the wisdom the wisdom, the acceptance, walking through nature,
yeah,
feeling, seeing the green and seeing the life, feeling the acceptance.
Yes.
Yep.
Knowing that, that what is, what has created that nature that you're walking through has also created you, that you are the same suchness in form that it is, right? The same intelligence is animating all, that you absolutely belong with all, that there is not the possibility of not belonging. Mm-hmm. That's where we want to live, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's always there and it's always available. This other stuff, we have to, as you say, sit down, sit in a chair, scrunch up our brow, feel bad, and then listen to horror stories about made-up stuff from the past. It's way harder to do than just a walk in nature.
I love my earbuds. I love my earbuds.
I love mine, too. All right. Well, you got a plan for recording?
Yep.
Okay.
I do.
That's great. You what?
I said thank you. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you. It's great to hear from you.
Okay.
Enjoy.
Hi. Bye, everybody.
I'll say bye for everybody, okay? Bye.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for joining us, Valerie. Sherry, I'm really appreciating, I think it's a couple of callers you've mentioned, the possibility to see learning as the next step instead of going into self-hatred.
Yes. Yeah. It just makes all the difference.
Yeah,
because all that stuff about you know better. Well, no, we don't. We don't know better until we know better. And the way we can tell we know better is we don't do that anymore,
yeah,
whatever that is. And it doesn't matter if we've done it 10,000 times. It doesn't actually matter if we've done it 10,000 times and each one of those 10,000 times we knew it wasn't the thing to do. We didn't know it. And it's when we know it that we're changed. And knowing it on that level is almost always extremely painful. And then the voices want to kick in and say, that was too hard and that was unfair and I didn't deserve that and it wasn't at it. Right? But that's what it took to get us to pay attention. And when we pay attention and we see whatever that is, then we're changed, and that issue is behind us. And that seems to me just what's involved in working through and letting go karma.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, and all of that being beaten up over it and feeling bad is just, it's a colossal waste of time.
Indeed. Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Is that somebody else?
Yes, we do. Let's talk to another caller here.
All right. Thank you.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Ellie in San Diego.
How are you, Ellie?
I'm doing great.
Good.
How are you?
I'm so good I can hardly stand myself. What's going on?
Well, I'm living in a lot of practice and a lot of going back and forth between the light and dark room. There's just a lot going on. I got married last week, and I'm going to have big stuff happening at work in the next week and a half. And I'm spending a lot of time practicing so that I can be present and let life lead me in it.
Yes, and enjoy it. Right?
That was really easy with the wedding.
Aha, uh-huh. Yeah. Well, good, because you didn't. You kind of put them in the same frame there, and I thought, gee, to myself, I didn't say it to you, but I hope the wedding was a little more up than what it sounds like this work stuff is going to be. So. Good. You enjoyed that part. So now it's going to be enjoying the work stuff.
And it's it's very easy to get overwhelmed by the little steps and let conditioning take me out of the moment. But I'm also seeing where I can get into the moment and really get that everything is okay.
Uh-huh. And so can you talk about those two just for the benefit of everybody, me and everybody else who's listening? Like, how do you get pulled off and how do you get back?
I get pulled off most often by, like, getting overwhelmed. I mm-hmm. start thinking about, well, I was really looking at the process of being overwhelmed and how, like, overwhelm starts for me when, I finish something and it's time to move to the next thing, and I have a process where egocentric karmic conditioning says, okay, well, you have to list every single possible thing you could be doing and figure out which one is the best, and rather than simply moving to the next thing. And so if I get caught up in that, sometimes it kind of depends. Often it'll take until I have one of my scheduled interruptions. I have alarms that go off throughout the day. And then sometimes those will help me get back on track, or whatever happens to bring me back into the moment. And then I remember that, oh, yeah, I can just breathe and do the next thing, and that's okay.
Because that is such an important point. What it does to us is present the 50,000 things that are coming up as if they're happening in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to do something about them in this moment. Whereas actually, you don't have to do anything about any of them in this moment, because when it's time to do them, they'll be the thing that's in the moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it tricks me into thinking I have to optimize or use my time wisely.
Mm-hmm. And keeps you from noticing that giving your attention to it is probably not the wisest use of your time.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? Because it's always, you need to be looking at all of the things that you need to do coming up so that you can know which is the, but of course, you're not able to do that because you're listening to a voice tell you how you need to be doing that.
Yeah. So seeing that has made a really big difference, because I'm catching it more easily now that I've seen it.
Yeah, and what you said about what brings you back, an alarm goes off and you're here, right? And all that stuff just goes away, because it only exists when we give our attention to it, right? The story in the head about all the things I need to be focused on or what I need to be doing, it just goes away. I hear the bell, I'm in the moment. Oh, this is not overwhelming. I'm fine.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it sets another hook and starts pulling us back out into whatever its story is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing that's been really just coming up is that it's been 1 year since I went to There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat.
Wow.
And I'm really proud of myself for sticking with it and continually engaging in practice for a year, which is really big for me.
Yes, and I hope that this isn't the end of our relationship.
No, not at all.
We're just going to go for the next year. It's like your marriage. You know, you want to go from anniversary to not, whoo, we're married. Okay, well, glad that's over. We can get on with our lives now. Yeah, good. Yes, it is huge, isn't it? Because the thing that people don't realize is the level of resistance that's going to come at us when we attempt to do something so significant, and there's another word, directed, as the kind of work that we do in awareness practice. You know, I mean, if you can read a book now and then, or you could, go to something or other and listen to somebody, that's not, sure, you can do that, that's entertaining. But when you go to a retreat, like there's nothing wrong with you, and then you commit to doing the work of that, and you do that for a year, you've gone past some major resistance in order to accomplish that.
It's
so, yeah.
Made a huge difference, and I'm really grateful. And I notice that conditioning keeps trying to convince me that I'm failing. And then I notice, oh, wait a second, I can still do this, and it's okay to start again today. And, so I just keep showing up and not listening to that voice.
Yes. Or if you do hear it, have it be a reminder that, oh, right, oh, yes, oh, good, yes, practice. Oh, that's right. that's what I'm doing. Thank you. Thank you for that. And its failure message becomes a support for success.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's really true. We have people come back who did practice and then wandered off into whatever and come back years later. And it's like, okay, well, that's what I was doing to get to the place where practice moved from a should to a, boy, do I want to do this. And so there's no harm in any of it. As long as this seems to be the theme of the show, we're taking advantage of every opportunity to learn life's lessons, then it's all good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you. Congratulations on your marriage.
And, thank you.
You keep me posted about the work thing, huh?
I'll do that.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Ellie. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Ashwini.
Hi, Ashwini.
I put myself on in the queue just in case there weren't any callers, so I'm happy to give up my place.
Michael, do we have folks?
We have more folks. Yes, we do.
Well, it's very gracious of you, Ashwini.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
But
bye.
I just report that I love practice, and I'm having a marvelous practice day.
Excellent. And it's a practice day.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Wow. Those are very good. So in a lot of traditions, of course, there's the Sabbath. And oftentimes the Sabbath is held out as a special day, right, where, I mean, different traditions do different things with it, but where it's just we would call it a practice day, a day
yep.
just to be with and in practice.
Absolutely.
That's a lovely thing to have, isn't it?
Yes, and I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Well, and as hard as we work you, I'm really happy that you're having one. So
well, yes, and I'll say one last little thing before I go, and that
uh-huh.
is, you know, the I have the privilege of living in a beautiful place, and I was walking along, thinking, oh wow, you know, the practice. What is practice? That's my koan, and I watched this white butterfly flutter over a group of purple flowers on next to this blue expanse of water in a sunny day, and life just started to speak. And you mentioned to another caller how we are so much a part of it, and to get up from a computer and to go out and really touch into how much a part of life we are is the best way to practice.
Yes.
It's really, it's just that's it, isn't it? That's just how we get in touch with the suchness of all that is and the suchness that we are.
Yes. And white butterflies, purple flowers, expanses of water, and sunny days, they all contribute mightily, don't they?
Oh, they do, but that's the reminder. That's the reflection we're looking for.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank
that's
you.
Great. Thank you. Bye.
I respect this. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
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 Okay, I think we have time for one more caller here, Sherry.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Ramita.
Hi.
Well, hello, Ramita.
Hello. I seem to get the last few minutes every once in a while. It's really nice.
You and we have a gal from Los Angeles who kind of arm wrestles you for that spot. good to hear from you.
Yes, it's as I've been listening to the show, this topic or that topic or this topic comes up, and just the last conversation stimulated a memory or an experience I've been having recently of, I did the Walking with a Mentor group coaching session, which was marvelous, really, really marvelous. And it started for me a new practice of getting up and going outside to walk first thing in the morning, before the sun comes up, before it's even beginning to get light, and going out with my recorder. And
heaven.
It's magical stepping across that threshold from inside my house to outside. It's, the cicadas, the stars, the aromas. It's all of the senses. Quiet in some ways because there's no man-made sounds, but the insects are just wow.
The folks who have the place when we don't.
yes, exactly. And that sense of I am a part of all of this. This is me. This is my home. And that feeling of being connected with nature, which, since I spend most of my days in a large building with a few windows here and there, it's bringing back a sense of groundedness that has been missing for a long, long time.
That is so inspiring. I really hope people get curious about that who aren't doing something like that and take it up for a while, because it's addictive, isn't it?
It is.
In the best possible sense.
Exactly. Yes, it gets me. I mean, when I wake up, I am eager to get up so I can go out and do that again.
Yeah.
It's like coming home.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned being in a big building with a few windows here and there. And sometimes in my slightly or not so slightly paranoid view of things, I wonder if it's unconsciously intentional that human beings are so often locked completely away from nature. No fresh air, very little sunshine, nothing beautiful in nature to look at, but just, walls and paint.
No wonder we go off into our imagination.
Yes, exactly. That it's a much... often, it seems, at least in the beginning, to be a more pleasant place to be. And certainly the reason that people turn to television sets and that sort of thing, because it's an escape from the environment. It's a sense of something beyond this closed-in little space where I am currently. I'm sitting here right now in front of an open window, and there's just a breeze, and as the sun is getting ready to head down, and I know so exactly what you mean. It's just the best. We're given all these bodies and all these senses, I think, for us to enjoy.
Yes, and then it colors my whole day, and there's that reconnection with groundedness. And then there's the recording that I've made of these present moment experiences and these little gifts from the mentor, and it's just really enriching my life dramatically. So,
And then when you have other times, I would picture myself driving or going from here to here at work or whatever, then those are the recordings I would really want to listen to.
Yes.
Take me back to that place.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
or make
soothing.
Make that place a part of where I am currently, I guess would be a better way to say that.
Yeah, remind me of what's real and what's true and authenticity and I'm a part of this universe, and
And it's just, beautiful.
Yes, and I'm home, and I belong, and I'm very grateful.
I know the feeling. You're going on retreat soon, aren't you?
And I'm very grateful for that, too. Yes, talking
yes,
all about
exciting.
About yeah, self-hate and nothing
yeah.
wrong with me. And
talk
going,
about a beautiful place that you're going.
Yes, the sanctuary in the pines.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's really good. All right. Well, it's wonderful to hear from you.
Nice talking to you, Sherry. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Romita. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Another big blessing for us, Sherry.
I know, I know. I think I'm so inspired, Michael, I'm going to have to go out and take a walk.
Great.
Yeah, look at some
yeah.
trees
yeah.
and watch the sunset and listen to some birds and remember what's important to me.
That sounds like a great idea. I think we could all take that on at some point this week.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Sherry. Good night.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.